You're listening to Let's Get It On with Big John McCarthy and Sean Wheelock.
Big John McCarthy has witnessed the best that the UFC had to offer.
That is it! Game, set, match! We have a new champion!
Your backstage pass to the world of mixed martial arts and combat sports. Only on the Ignotainment Media Network.
Let's get it on!
Hey everyone, welcome to Let's Get It On with Big John McCarthy and me, Sean Wheelock. Every week on this podcast, John and I give you an inside look at MMA and combat sports, always separating fact from fiction. On this week's program, we'll speak in depth about the ABC's new MMA Rules and Regulations Committee, to which both John and I have been appointed. Big John and I will also examine a small timekeeping error from last Friday night's World Series of Fighting, which could have had major implications and reinforces just how important the job of timekeeper is in fighting. And we'll look at boxing's fastest rising star, Gennady Golovkin, who last Saturday defeated David Lemieux to claim the IBF middleweight world title and improve his record to 34-0. Plus, as we do on every episode of Let's Get It On, Big John will answer your questions. Submit them via email, info@letsgetitonpodcast.com, and on Twitter by using the hashtag AskBJM. Remember that you can download and subscribe to our podcast on the iTunes Store. For Android, download the Stitcher app and subscribe. And you can go straight to our website, letsgetitonpodcast.com. Well, this week, articles have run on MMA Junkie, ESPN, and MMAfighting.com detailing the ABC's new MMA Rules and Regulations Committee, which is comprised of 10 members, including John and me. I'm incredibly honored to serve as the chairman of this committee as appointed by ABC President Mike Mazzulli, and I'm truly thankful to the incredibly positive reception that our new committee has received from the MMA community, including, of course, the fans. So, John, Mike Mazzulli has put the 10 of us in a position to, I think, really do some good, positive, and progressive things for our sport of mixed martial arts.
Well, that's hopefully what we're going to be doing. What we want to do is we want it to be where the rules of MMA are at least being looked at every year and assessed to what's working, what's not. Is this good for the fighter? Is it bad for the fighters? Is this good for the sport itself? Is it bad for the sport? All of this needs to be looked at every year to say, is this rule working for the sport? Is it making the fans understand the sport better? Is it allowing the officials to do a better job inside of the ring? Is it allowing the fighters a safe aspect, although not impeding their ability to win the fight? There's a lot that goes on with this, and our whole job should always be to always be working to improve the sport of MMA.
So let's talk about the 10 of us who are now on this committee. So I said
some ugly, ugly people on it. Ugly people.
Randy Couture, Matt Hughes, Jeremy Horn, the referees, Rob Hines and Kevin McDonald, both have fought professionally. Brian Dunn, who heads the Nebraska Commission, who fought professionally. Matt Woodruff, who's our treasurer, or rather our secretary. We don't have a treasurer because none of us are paid. We don't get any money.
Say, what money.
We wish we
have?
Needed a treasurer. We have Secretary is Matt Woodruff, who has the Georgia Commission, and Dr. David Watson, who's the main fight doctor out of the state of Nevada. So I think this is, you know, it's tough. I'm from Shawnee, Kansas. I want to be as humble as possible. So excluding the 9 of you, this is a blue ribbon panel.
Well, you know, look, at you're going to always get somebody that says, I think you should have this person on it. And, you know, that's fine. But what we're trying to do is hit the different sections of the country. Also, we've got, when you're looking at officials, we have one official being Kevin McDonald from the East Coast. We have an official in Rob Hines being from the Midwest, and we have an official in John McCarthy being from the West Coast. So we're trying to, you know, there's little things that happen in each section of the country, and we're trying to get it to where those officials can say, look, this is what we're seeing in the sport. This is what we think is difficult. This is where we have confusion. So those, you know, three officials are all ABC certified trainers, been in the sport for a long time. Are there other officials out there that could do it? Absolutely. But, you know, these are the ones that stepped up and said, hey, you know, I want to be part of that. I want to do that. And so they're giving their time, and it's, you know, something that we thank them for. You look at the fighters. We have Randy Couture. Now you're going to get someone say, well, you know, Randy Couture, he hasn't been part of the sport in a long time. You know, give me a break. We can't have active fighters really being on it. We have to have people that, for the most part, are, you know, past their career. So we've got Randy You know, you can't question his all of the credentials that he brings and what he's done in the sport can't be questioned. Matt Hughes, same thing. You know, cannot question what he's done in the sport and the credentials he brings. Now, some people I've heard say, well, he works for the UFC. Well, he does have a job as a vice president of, I think, fighter relations or something like that. And that's, you know, I'm not going to sit there and say that he's got to give that job up to take a non-paying job. You know, what's his best interest? His best interest is what's best for the sport of MMA, because that's what's best for the promotion of the UFC. So you've got, you know, Matt Hughes there, and then you've got Jeremy Horn. The other thing I've heard is, oh, you don't have a striker in there. as far as I remember, Jeremy Horn, Randy Couture, and Matt Hughes were MMA fighters, and striking is part of what they did. So I just laugh at some of the people and what they say. You can't ask for more experience than some of the people we have on this. You've got, you know, Jeremy Horn has got over 100 professional fights. Matt Hughes is way over 50 professional fights. Randy was somewhere in the 30-somes. You have Brian Dunn, who had about 70 professional fights. You know, we've got guys that have a ton of experience, and that's what the whole thing is about, is getting people with experience in the sport that are going to look at it in a justified fashion of saying, look at, these are the things that I think are working, and these are the things I think that they're causing a problem for us, and it causes confusion. It causes a problem as, you know, when I was a fighter, I didn't like this, you know, and I think this is what's better. Doesn't mean that because someone has the idea, it's going to happen. It just means that it's something that we're going to look at and as a group come to a basis of what we think is best. But again, the one thing that everyone needs to realize, we could sit there and want to change, you know, X, Y, and Z, and we present that to the entire body of the ABC, the Association of Boxing Commissions, is the representatives from each specific state athletic commission and tribal athletic commission. They're the ones that are going to vote on this, and that will say whether there's going to be a rule change or not. This committee does not say that there's going to be a rule change. We come together, we gather information, we bring about ideas, we come to a consensus of what we think is best for the sport, and then when there is the ABC convention, we present that to the body, and they're the ones that make the decision.
John, I've kind of been laughing that I'm quickly the king of non-paying jobs in MMA right now. I'm not paid for my role.
That's just part of MMA, man.
It is, right? I'm not paid for my role on the Kansas Athletic Commission, but that role allows me to chair this ABC committee. And, of course, I'm not paid. None of us are paid on this. I love that, because when you start getting paid, it changes everything. And I'm not saying, look, that this is just altruism, but the reality is we're doing this for the good of the sport. We're not getting paid for this. We're putting forth ideas. And as I've been doing a lot of media interviews on this, and I'm so appreciative that the fans, the media, everybody has responded. Everybody's asking questions, which is why I think it's important we're talking about this on our show, is we're a recommendation body, like you were saying. So even if we vote 10-0 for something, all that means is that we give it to Mike Mazzulli and the executive committee of the ABC, and then they can take it on to the general membership. We're not saying, hey, you have to do this. We're coming together and saying it's the opinion of our group, our committee, that this is something that needs to be changed, and then it will go from there. So we're not forcing anybody to do anything. We're not getting paid. There's no exerting of influence, and I think that's really key.
Well, it is key, but you're going to get people that are going to be upset. You know, first they're going to say, why didn't you change this? Why aren't you doing this? And, you know, the one thing that people need to understand is you can't just rapidly change everything that is a rule within the sport. That's just not going to fly. You have to be smart in the way you go about doing this. You need to be, you know, very efficient in saying why something needs to change. You have to give all of the reasons why. You have to say what the impact of that rule change is going to cause, what the pros and the cons. And you've got to give all this information so someone can make an educated decision when they decide to vote. Am I going to vote for that to be a change in the rules that I now allow within my commission, wherever you're at? Or is this something that I say, no, I don't think this is for the best of the sport, and I'm not going to go with it? And if they don't go with a rule change that we all decide, as you know, we could have the 10 people on this committee say, this is something that needs to be changed. And if it's not a majority vote inside of that, you know, room when the ABC votes on it, then it's not going to change. And, you know, all the work that we do is for nothing, and that's fine. You know, you got to try. But the one thing is, we can't sit still and just let year after year go by with nothing being done to change things that are causing problems within the sport. You know, the rule set, when we came up with them, it was a basis. It was supposed to be a basis, and it was something that we're going to say, okay, this is it. But we have seen over the years that, you know, there's things that have really worked out well within that rule structure. And there's things that fighters are smart enough to say, I can take and press this to the edge and utilize this component of the rules to my advantage. And that's not what that rule was put there for. It wasn't put there to have someone try to take advantage of a position. It was put there with the idea that they were protecting a fighter in a given situation. And so all the things that are there that we need to look at are all things that we, as people that are part of the sport, believe, look at, this is something that it's causing a problem within our sport. It causes a problem for the officials. The fans don't understand it. They don't understand it from, you know, the position of they hear this word and they think this, and then the official is doing something different. The fighters many times don't understand it. And when the fighter doesn't understand it, that's a real problem, because they're the ones going out there putting their butts on the line, and you need to make sure that they understand exactly what they can do when in an offensive position and what they need to defend against when they're in a defensive position.
MMA has evolved so quickly. The sport, and again, I always use UFC 1, November 12, 1993, as the baseline. Things came before, strong style works and mixed match fighting, and even Pancrase, which wasn't MMA in my opinion, just because of the rules and the limitations. But if you go along with me, the baseline, the start of what we call MMA now, November 12, 1993, Art Davey, Horian Gracie putting together UFC 1, you were there. That means that our sport is not even 22 years old, and yet it has changed so rapidly. I mean, I think about even, and I talk about this a lot on our program, when I was at Pride. So the last Pride event, I believe it was April. It was March or April, and I think April of 2007. How much has the sport changed since then? It's radical. And that's as I was talking to Mike Mazzulli about trying to do something like this when he was elected president back in July in San Diego at the ABC convention. Let's just look at things. Even if we don't change things, let's just look at things, because MMA looks so different than it did even 5 years ago, 8 years ago, certainly 15 years ago. Why are we just stuck in this time capsule with the rules? Doesn't mean we have to change everything, but let's just start asking a lot of questions. Let's be open-minded. Let's not be such traditionalists that we just say, well, we do this because we've always done this, because to me, that's a losing game.
That's ridiculous, but that's a lot of what has really occurred. You know, and you know, this is not getting down on anybody, but you know, if I sit here and I say, Sean, what was the major change they made last year? What was it?
In MMA, nothing.
In MMA, well, as far as rules, nothing. What did they add? They added 115-pound men's division. My God,
that was it. That wasn't a change. It was an addition. That was it. A men's 115-pound division. As a commentator, John, just to put that in perspective, so I've commentated over 2,000 fights. It's close to 2,200. I've done three 120-pound men fights, and now we're going to have a 115-pound men's division.
Well, that's the whole point. Is look at, we got a lot of women that have a hard time making 115 pounds. We just don't have that many men walking around somewhere around 115 pounds are going to fight MMA in the 115-pound division. It's like, that's what we did. I mean, look, we need to do things that are going to be productive in helping the sport. Now, there was other weight classes that you could bring in that I'll say, okay, you know what? That's a productive move. The 115-pound was not the productive move. And we need to be more productive as a group with the ABC in bringing the sport forward throughout the years as they come.
We're going to be totally transparent. And I think it's important as we talk about it on our program, exactly how we're set up. And the only heat that I've taken is that I set up a Yahoo account for our email. I've had a few people tell me that was kind of janky, but if anybody knows me, I struggle with technology.
Oh, John, I know.
What's my new nickname?
Boost go Mobile, ahead. Baby. Boost Mobile.
I struggle. So I set up a Yahoo account, but you know what? It might be janky, but here's the address. MMA rules and regs at yahoo.com. Again, MMA rules and regs at yahoo.com. I've received over 100 emails coming in, and I'm going to personally answer every one because we want everybody to be able to get their ideas to us. Somebody might think of something that we've never thought of or make us look at something differently. And that's why we're open. And we're all about transparency. We're going to have monthly conference calls. We're not hiding. We're talking to the media, talking to fans. We're open about who's on our committee. We want to kind of be different from, I think, the way a lot of things were done in the past. There's no secrecy because, to me, secrecy implies we have something to hide. We have absolutely nothing to hide. We're trying to get things out to the public, not hide them from the public.
That's it. I mean, it's ridiculous if you sit there and it's like, what's to hide? You know, you want to know what we're talking about? I'll tell you what we're talking about. It's real simple, but it's a matter of there needs to be something done. And you can't sit back and wait. You know, that's just ridiculous. But, you know, the best part is you're sitting there. People are saying that, you know, Yahoo is janky or whatever you're using. It's like, really? Okay, you pay for the frickin' mail account and then we'll use it.
Yeah, it's like, right, because we have no money. We're not getting paid, and we have $0 and 0 cents. Yahoo is free, and I know how to use it.
There you go. We have no budget. Yeah, what do you want to say? It's just, you know, people are so ridiculous about things. You just, you know, you can't sit here and make, you know, rash decisions on anything. You can't sit here and think that we are going to change the world. We're not. And when you get mad about that, go ahead and get mad. You know, say all the things you're going to say. You guys are useless, whatever, you know, but what we are doing is spending the time to try to make the sport better, and that's what needs to be done. Last time I'm going to say
When I was talking with Mike Mazzulli in San Diego about this, and I was so honored that Mike not only put me on this committee but made me chairman, although, John, I defer to you and the other eight people. I mean, this is a great group. I think all chairman means is I set up the Yahoo account and I coordinate the monthly conference calls, but my vote counts the same as everybody else's. But it really is meaningful to me. And again, as somebody who watched UFC 1 live and wrote the book with Art Davey and John, you and I have become such great friends. And I'm so immersed in this sport on every level as a commentator all the way through. I go get pummeled at trainings in my gym. It means a lot to me just to, if I can have any sort of positive influence on this sport whatsoever. But when I was first talking to Mike Mazzulli about this, I brought up the NFL's competition committee, and I've talked about this in some of the media interviews, and I'm not saying MMA is the NFL. I know it's always dangerous to compare one sport to the other, but what I like about the NFL, I'll take that back. What I love about the NFL's competition committee is they continually ask themselves, how do we make the NFL safer and how do we make the NFL better? The best example this year, you look at the extra point. Because there was a lot of heat saying the extra point is automatic. Last year in the NFL, there were 8 extra points missed. The percentage was like 99.85%. It was boring. So the competition committee got together. They studied it. They thought if we move it back from the 2 to the 15, now we have something. Now it's a little more exciting. And you're seeing kickers miss extra points. It's not virtually automatic. That came out of the competition committee. The competition committee in the NFL studied it. They made a recommendation. It went to the owners, and the owners voted and approved it. I think that's a really good role model. We're looking for those things to make MMA safer, make MMA better.
Yeah, and, you know, that's the whole purpose of what we're doing. And, you know, again, there's going to be people out there that are going to have ideas. You know, you need to bring, you know, knees to the head of a grounded fighter back. You need to have soccer kicks. You need to say that stomps are allowed or something in that realm. And it's like, okay, that's great that you think that, but does that make the sport safer? And no. So it's going to be hard for us to get that through, whether all 10 of us said, yes, we want to say that, you know what, knees to the head of a grounded fighter are good. So we're going to say stomps are good. We're going to say soccer kicks are good. We'll never get it through the Association of Boxing Commission's body because they're going to look and say, that doesn't make it safer. That doesn't make that does not take liability and put it farther away from coming and attacking me. It puts it much closer, and I'm not going to do that. That's the way they're going to look at it. So we need to be smart about what we do. We need to, you know, be educated in how we bring about the wording of why we're going to do something, how it's going to affect the sport, how it's going to be a positive, what the negatives will be possibly if we do have this change. But you know, we're not going to make everyone happy. I don't expect to make everyone happy. It's not something that I even, you know, care about. I really don't, because there's people out there that they're just unreasonable. Our job is to do things that hopefully are going to make small impacts in the sport, make the sport better for the fighters, more understandable to the fans, and keep the fighters as safe as possible.
What I'm really heartened by is the fact that I have not seen a single comment, and I've looked at the comment sections in the online articles, and I've looked at social media, and this is a decent-sized story in MMA, and it's definitely gaining some traction. I have not seen one person say this committee is a bad idea. People say you should do this, you shouldn't do that. All right, they picked up the Yahoo account, fair enough, but nobody has said, I think this is a horrible idea. And that makes me feel really good, because that lets me know that we are truly onto something.
Well, you know, let's be honest. There's people out there that think it's a horrible committee, okay, because they're not on it. That's fine. That's all well and good. But, you know, I challenge anyone to come up and start picking apart the people that we have and say that their credentials are better than the people that we have. They may be as good, but they ain't going to be better. And so you can only have so many people on that committee. And I think, you know, together as a group, we get along. We're going to do what we can to get things going in a direction to where the ABC every year is looking at making this rules committee have a review of what's being done and what we can do to, you know, just make the sport better.
And, you know, you say better. We were talking about safer. And to clarify, we've already had our first meeting by conference call. And speaking of free accounts, full transparency, what do we use, John? Welcome to freeconferencecall.com. And our budget is zero, but we're pulling it off. But we've had our first, our next conference call, our meeting with the group is next week. But we talked about 12 to 6 elbows. Maybe that rule needs to go. Heel strikes to the kidneys. Maybe that rule needs to go. Just because we're making our sport safer doesn't mean we have to be more restrictive, because I know you and I feel, we can't speak for the other 8 members, but you and I feel that there are some rules in the unified rules that are just ridiculous, and they don't make it safer. They make it more confusing. And by making it more confusing, sometimes you're making things less safe.
Well, exactly. And it's a matter of, you know, if you have something, there are rules in place that have other rules that kind of, you know, cover what that rule was there in the first place for. So it's already being covered. So it's almost like it's got a double layer. And there's reasons to have things and there's reasons not to. But, you know, the one thing that everyone needs to understand is we're hopefully going to get rid of some of the things that cause confusion. But there's also going to possibly be things that we end up adding. You know, we'll take out some rules, but you know what? There might be rules or fouls that are actually added to make the safety of the fighter in certain situations, make it covered, make it, you know, where there's no doubt what a fighter can do in this given situation. They're going to be allowed to do this. You will not be allowed to do this, and make it so the fans understand. In that position, the fighter can be attacked this way. They cannot be attacked this way. And that's the whole point, is to get this to where there's less of a fog covering it, because, you know, it's not just the fans. You know, from the very start of the unified rules, I was there. Okay, I helped put those together, and there was rules that I hated. You know, I looked at it, so that's you know, as blatant as I can say, I would say that's fucking ridiculous. All right, but you had people there, and you had to all come to a conclusion, and not everyone's going to look at things the same, and everyone brings their own, you know, ideas to something, and the way they were raised and things that they say they saw and all these things. You know, there was things and, you know, people that I looked at and go, you've never been in a fight in your life and you're coming up with this. Okay.
Yeah.
In the end, I had to go with it. But, you know, I tried to cover things as much as I could to make it to where I knew I could officiate a fight and know what was allowed and what wasn't. You know, they were talking about taking away elbows and the fact that, oh, you could hit with the forearm, you could hit with the back of the arm, but 1 inch from the tip of the elbow and 1 inch on either side could not, you know, that was the illegal part. And I go, really? I want any of you to sit here and tell me, what am I hitting? And I would throw an elbow. I said, what did I hit with? Did I hit with the tip or did I hit with the forearm? And they couldn't tell. They go, oh, I guess that's a problem. Yeah, I guess it is. You know, and you know, there's things that, you know, were taken and put into context for them, but I knew exactly what I could allow. But the problem was the wording that came out and the varying view of what that wording meant with people that did not do my job, that caused a problem for all of these officials throughout the world that were using the unified rules, because then they would look at this sheet of paper with these, you know, fouls, and they would interpret them the way that they just felt like interpreting them. They didn't know the true context of it. And they went sometimes, you know, just basic, you know, black and white, what's on the sheet. Well, it's saying this, so this is what it means to me. And they would use that. And then another person would come in that said, no, that's not the way it's supposed to be. It's supposed to be this way. Well, no, that's, we don't do it. You can't have that. You have got to have it to where everybody is on the same page. They understand exactly what is allowed and how they need to cover that rule. If it comes up, if there's a foul, what they need to do and what is actually the foul and what is not.
Again, I want to encourage everybody, and I've been so pleased with the response, and I am personally answering everyone. I need to give the other nine of you the password so you can answer this too, but I'm personally right now responding to everyone, and that's my plan to do so. Any ideas you have, anything you like, don't like, additions, deletions, changes, out-of-the-box ideas, MMARulesandRegs@yahoo.com, MMARulesandRegs@yahoo.com. John, let's tell you as a final point on this. It's quirky because even if we push it through and the ABC pushes it through, the ABC is really a confederation. States still don't have to adopt. There's going to be pressure to do so, but I always give the example of 12 to 6 elbows. Mississippi allows 12 to 6 elbows. We hope that if we make this recommendation, it goes to Mike Mazzulli, the president of the ABC, and the executive committee, goes to full membership, they voted in. We hope everyone will fall in line. The reality is, they don't have to fall in line. It's kind of a gentleman's agreement. It's kind of the way suspensions are upheld with ABC members.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And, you know, and there's people that are going to sit there, and there will be people that will sit there and say, well, I'm not going to change our legislation. I'm not going to change it, you know, because it would actually be work for them, or they have an issue, or they have an issue or an agenda that they want to try to just, you know, ride out like, no, I'm going to go with what the original was. It is. And not change things. And all that will do is hurt the sport. It will give more confusion. And it is, you know, it's ridiculous that they would do it, but there will be people that will do it. You know, so nothing is perfect. You can't expect this, you know, and as soon as it changes, and we'll say, you know, California changes to what the new unified rules are, and Nevada changes, but another state, you know, somewhere else doesn't, then people are going to be like, why aren't they changing? And then there's just going to be talk about that. And really, there should be. Because any state that doesn't follow what the unified rules are, the fans should be on that state. The fans should be on those commissioners. The fans should be on those executive directors saying, why is it that you have to be different? Why is it that you can't conform and be with everybody else and make this sport like it is in the NFL or Major League Baseball, where it doesn't change from one location to the next? Why is it that you have to be so different? What makes you special? What makes you better? Nothing. And the fans and the media can get those people to be on board with what should be done.
Feels pretty good being a reformer. I think I'm going to get used to this. I like this. Every week on this podcast, John and I answer your questions. Ask away via email, info@letsgetitonpodcast.com. See, no janky Yahoo address there. This is big time on this show, thanks to Ignotainment. info@letsgetitonpodcast.com. And, of course, on Twitter by using the hashtag AskBJM. And, of course, please, please, please include a pronunciation guide for your name. Eric McGracken is always so polite. Well, he's Canadian, so what do we expect? The only people that are more polite than American Midwesterners. Eric McGracken. And a lawyer in British Columbia, one of our best listeners, one of our biggest fans. Thanks, Eric. Always gives the pronunciation guide as well. And he asked a really good question. John, given that marijuana is banned in competition for fighter safety, to ensure a fighter is not competing while impaired, would it not make sense to rely on the integrity of a pre-bout physical exam to ensure a fighter is sober, instead of relying on the not-so-reliable marijuana metabolite testing system?
Well, I think I've talked about that exact thing before, and that's what I came up with as, you know, my idea for, look at the whole thing behind marijuana is it's not that, you know, most commissions, and I can't say all because I don't work with all, but most commissions don't look at it like it's a performance enhancer in the fact that it's helping the fighter. They're actually concerned about that fighter's safety if they were under the influence, and they don't want fighters coming in under the influence, so they put a limit on it. It's part of WADA. It's part of VADA. They put these limits saying, well, okay, this is where we're saying that the person is under the influence, and this is the point where we're saying they're not. Now, you can't, it's not a basis of fact. Everybody handles different things in different ways. Weight has something to do with it. You can have a guy that's 125 pounds. He's allowed to have, we'll say, 150 nanograms of marijuana metabolites in his system, where the 265 pound guy is allowed to have the exact same amount. Well, I'll tell you what, that's like saying that the, 125 pound fighter could have 300, because that's the same. If you're looking pound for pound here, that's going to be somewhere in the area of where that, that freaking heavyweight could be at if they were in the same freaking nanogram area. It's ridiculous. What we need to do is do something to where we have a pre-fight physical before the show. Now, this is not at the weigh-in. Before the fighters are allowed to go out, they have to again see the doctor. And the doctor looks at them and says whether they believe that they're in any type of fashion under the influence of anything as far as marijuana or anything like that. To sit there and to say that, it's something we're going to test for over and over and have these situations when – look, it is a drug that it's out there. It's going to be out there. It's going to become more legal everywhere. It is a commonplace thing. It doesn't do anything in the effect of the fights. And there comes a point where you just got to be more reasonable in how you're going to go about enforcing things. If you're worried about the safety of the person that's actually taking it, then have a certified physician that understands people that are under the influence and under the influence symptoms, and have them looked at by that physician before they're allowed to go out. And now I don't care what you test. It doesn't matter. The number doesn't mean anything, because I have the person that says, no, they're not in any way under the influence of that drug at this moment.
Next question, James Jones. John, who is the meanest fighter from the early days of MMA that you ever came across? I love these old school questions. Oh my God. Pretty cool. Because I'm interested in the answer.
Let's see. What would you think would be the answer? Come on. Let's hear your nominations.
You know, we were talking about him a couple of weeks ago. David Tank Abbott would pop to mind, but I've never actually met him.
Everyone would say Tank.
Oleg Taktarov. I'm a huge Oleg Taktarov fan. I mean, his sambo was so good. I don't know if he was mean.
Not at all. He was the nicest guy ever. Nice. Man. Quiet, not a mean bone in his body.
I've trained sambo. I trained it a lot, actually, and there's just so many nasty leg locks in it. But yeah, he seems like a really nice guy. I just had a chance to meet Gerard Gourdeau. What a cool guy. He's 60 years old now. That's hard to believe. When Art Davey and I were at the MMA show in Syracuse, he was so nice. He's like grandfather. Yeah. But he was pretty mean. Art Davey said if we had held UFC 1 on the streets, he might have won. Would that be your pick, Gourdeau?
You know what? There'd be a couple that would be in there. If you're going to say in the first, first UFC, Gerard Gourdeau was the meanest guy. But he's a very super nice guy. But when it came to fighting, he had a mean streak in him. And I go off of people that had a mean streak in fighting. They like to inflict damage on somebody.
Yeah, he bit Hoyce.
Yeah, exactly, man. And that's why Hoyce held the choke. Most people look and say, oh, that was cheap. No, man, he bit his ear to the point he was bleeding. But, if you're going to say UFC 1, it would have been Gerard Gourdeau is probably the meanest guy. The second one, it's tough to say, but really – if you're going to say the meanest guy out there was a guy named Frank Hamaker, who came from Gerard Gourdeau, and he was probably the meanest guy that there was at that one. You go into UFC 3 and say mean, God, I guess you'd have to say Harold Howard, even though he wasn't a mean guy. it all comes to your interpretation of mean. Tank Abbott, people are going to say that he was mean. He was smart. He's a smart guy. Did he like to hurt people? He enjoyed hurting people. Don Fry is a mean guy. Very nice guy. But when it came to fighting, man, he was mean. He would go after people and he would absolutely try to hurt them, but that's his job. So I look at mean in a different fashion than most people.
Next question. This comes from Twitter, @K_Kaba, who used the hashtag AskBJM to submit this question. John, do you feel it should be a requirement for MMA refs to have experience competing in combat sports?
No. You know, I get asked that kind of question a lot, saying, you know, don't you think fighters would make the best? And it's like, you have no idea how many fighters I have tried to train to become referees. And a lot of them are just horrible. You know, they're just, there's something about being an official that, you know, you have to understand they have to change. Frank Trigg is probably the highest caliber fighter and highest profile guy that I've trained to be a referee. And Frank's a great guy and he's doing a really good job through the amateurs right now with MMA officiating. But Frank had a lot of issues in learning how to be an official in MMA, not the fighter. Because the fighter comes in with a lot of preconceived ideas of what they like, what they think is good, what they allow. And you can't have those as the official. Everything that you know you're doing as the official is different than what you're doing as the fighter. And your main concern is the safety of that fighter. And to sit there and to understand at a certain point that you're responsible for what occurs in that cage. You're responsible for the damage. And there's going to be damage no matter what. That's part of fighting. But when it gets to the point of unnecessary damage and you're allowing it to happen because you think that you could have fought your way out of that situation, and so you're going to give this guy the chance to fight his way out of the situation when all the other information there is telling you, you need to stop this fight. That becomes the problem with some people that are fighters that then come over to the realm of being an official. The one thing I will tell you is I do believe that every official needs to be part of the sport. Now, being part of the sport is being someone that is training. They go to training and they're always trying to learn. They're trying to learn the ground game more. They're trying to figure out the new things that are occurring. They're trying to learn the stand-up game more. They're trying to learn about head injuries and all these things. They need to be someone that is part of the sport, not a competitor in the sport, but they need to be someone that is always working within the sport, working in the aspects of grappling, working in the aspects of the stand-up, working with MMA fighters to always learn the new things that are occurring, learn what is happening now and how guys are going about making these things happen. That's what they need to be part of. If they're not part of that, then they do not need to be part of the sport.
Keep your questions coming. You can email us info@letsgetitonpodcast.com and submit them on Twitter by using the hashtag AskBJM. Still to come on this week's episode of Let's Get It On, we'll look at a slightly embarrassing timekeeping error from last Friday night's World Series of Fighting 24, which could have had major implications. And we'll discuss the rapid ascension of Gennady Golovkin, who is now 34-0 and poised to become the next major star in boxing. With John McCarthy, I'm Sean Wheelock, and you are listening to Let's Get It On. Hey, this is Sean Wheelock.
And this is Big John McCarthy.
If you're a fan of our show, then you're going to love the rest of the Ignotainment podcast lineup.
Like the Ocho Man behind the eight ball and the Whiskey Philosopher with Jeff Cooper.
You can find these great podcasts and more at Ignotainment.com. Thanks again and enjoy the rest of the program.
Let's get it on!
When looking for new and exciting clothing concepts, look no further than Lambs to Lions. Lambs to Lions has great designs that incorporates the past from boxing with the new and exciting evolution of MMA. We all start out as lambs, but with time, training, and hard work, we can all become lions. Be part of the Lambs to Lions movement and check out all of their great designs. You can get your Lambs to Lions gear at the Las Vegas Fight Shop or go to lambstolionsbrand.com.
Now, back to Let's Get It On with your hosts, Big John McCarthy and Sean Wheelock.
Last Friday at World Series of Fighting 24, held at Foxwoods in Connecticut, there was a small mistake made by the timekeeper, which ultimately proved inconsequential but could have had major implications. It occurred during round number 2 of the Nick Newell versus Tom Marcellino bout, when the bell was rung 3 times to indicate the 10-second warning, causing the referee, our good friend Dan Mergliotta, to think, and I don't blame him, that the round was over. So, John, it's easy to say, yeah, no big deal, but in the grand scheme of things, timekeeping mistakes, big or small, can be a very big deal.
Timekeeping is it's so important when it comes to combat sports, and everyone looks at it like, oh, there's nothing to it. No, there's a lot to it. There really is. And you know, the good timekeepers, they have a system where they have a sheet of paper that's out in front of them, and they've got the rounds as far as the minutes of the rounds, and it's when that minute of the round goes, they're making an Xbox or a check mark into that minute, and their attention is on this clock while they're also watching, you know, the fight. Now, it's different to be within boxing compared to MMA because there's a difference of what is expected of you. It's a little bit more difficult to be the timekeeper of a boxing match than it is of an MMA match. But when you're looking at, you know, what happened at Foxwoods, we have a timekeeper that, you know, instead of the clap, we use boards, we use plastic, almost cutting boards that, we'll take and slap together to make a sound so the official understands there's 10 seconds left in the round. What most people don't realize is that 10-second warning is truly not for the official in the ring. It's for the inspectors on the outside of the ring so that the cornermen can start to get all of their stuff, get their ice bags, get their buckets, get their water, get the stool, and get themselves over to that gate so that as soon as that round ends, we're getting them up inside of that cage so they can be with their fighter for the longest amount of time we can give them, hopefully about 50 seconds. And that's what that sound is for. It also helps me as the official because now I know that there's going to be the end of the round within this 10-second period. Now, you're going to hear some officials are going to sit there and they're actually going to bark it out telling the fighters, stop at the sound of the bell, 10 seconds left, or anything like that. I don't do that. That's not, in my opinion, it's not my job to give that warning. They can hear the boards the same as me, and it does not matter if you as the official tell them, stop at the bell or 10 seconds left, gentlemen, or whatever you want to say. If you're not in place as the official to make that official stop of the round by telling them either stop or time, putting your hand through and doing the right mechanics, then when that late blow comes, it's your fault. Doesn't matter that you said stop at the bell. Doesn't matter that you told them 10 seconds. It's your fault that it occurred, and now you have to deal with something that you ended up causing, really. Although you're not the one that threw the punch, you didn't do what is your job. So the 10 seconds is important to us. You'll notice that, a long time ago I came up with this thing where I started pointing at the timekeeper when there was 10 seconds left. When you'd hear the clap of the boards, you'll see me and I'll just point in their direction. And the whole purpose of that is I'm telling them, because I've talked to them before, and I tell them, look, when you make that 10-second clap, I'm going to point in your direction. That's telling you that I heard it. If I don't point, I want you to bang those things again because it's telling you I didn't hear it and I want to have an idea that the end of the round is coming up. And so I'll always do that point. Now everyone's starting to do the point, and that's great because, this is a mechanic. It works for you. It helps you. It can put you in a situation where you're not being surprised by the bell. And that's exactly what occurred to poor Dan, is all of a sudden Dan's getting this ding, ding, ding. Well, he's thinking that's the end of the round. That's why he stops the fight. And he did exactly what any referee would do in that given situation with that sound and what he had. He's figuring they forgot to give me the 10-second warning. And so he stops the round when it's actually at 4 minutes and 50 seconds instead of the 5-minute mark.
John, I don't know if you know this, but I ripped you off. I'm not allowed to referee boxing or anything anymore since I took that unpaying job with the Kansas Athletic Commission. They're cool with me commentating and doing everything else, including this show. I just can't referee, and fair enough. But even before we were friends and before I really knew you, it's not that I didn't like you. We just didn't know each other to be friends. I've always been a huge admirer of yours, so much so that I ripped you off on that. And I thought, that's really smart. You're just acknowledging to the timekeeper, I got it. When I would referee boxing, even though I understood that's not for the fighters, and like you, I never said, all right, gentlemen, 10 seconds. I would move a little closer so I could immediately jump in between them on the bell so somebody wasn't getting hit after the bell. It told me to move in positionally. Obviously, the mechanics and the movement of refereeing boxing is different than MMA, but I would move just that little bit closer. And it's important. It's one of those little things that even people who've watched thousands of fights don't really think about. The timekeeper to me is as critical as the referee and the judges at an event.
Well, I'm not going to say that they're as critical, but they're absolutely necessary. And the reason that, you know, when we sit there and say critical or any of these things, what people don't understand is that the timekeeper has a direct response to sometimes what the referee is going to do, especially in boxing. Because in boxing, I'll give you a for instance, so, you know, to make this understandable for most people. When we have a situation in boxing, we have a knockdown, okay? And let's say that the fight goes for 2 minutes and 50 seconds and my timekeeper gives this clap of the boards and I do this point in boxing, and I do boxing here in California all the time, so this is common for me. And then we'll say 2 seconds later, I have this flurry that goes on, and boom, a guy goes down and I call him down. I say down and I get the guy, other guy to the neutral corner. Well, at least in my mind, I know that my 10-second warning has occurred. So as I have this person, and we'll say the fighter's fairly hurt, I know that if I end up in a point where I'm counting over him and he gets up, it's telling me that he's going to not take any more damage in this round if I allow the fight to go on, because they're not going to ring the bell at this point until I start the fight. But if the timekeeper's doing the right thing, I'm going to go through my count, and if I can let this fight go on, I'm going to tell them box, and as soon as I give that signal to box, he's going to ring that bell and my hand's going to come out and say time before there's ever another punch thrown. Now, this is all stuff that, you know, as a referee, this is something where we play with time and we work within the structure of what we have, but this is me using that time and saying, okay, if this guy's hurt and I may not let him go on if I think that he, you know, if there's 2 minutes left in the round and the way he's reacting right now, I may not let him go on, but I know he's going to get a 1 minute rest where he's not going to have someone attacking him and he's going to be able to get himself back in a way that he can come back in this fight. Or at least it also gives me another minute to go and look at him, and I can still call the fight during the break between the rounds. If I say, nope, he still hasn't recovered enough, the fight's over, I can do that. So I'm doing things that are beneficial for the fans. Sometimes I'll say it's beneficial for the fighter because, you know, if he's able to recover, it's beneficial for that fighter and it's good for the sport. Well, if I have a timekeeper that does not do the right thing and I go through this entire same progression and I say, all right, I'm going to let him go because I know he's not going to take any more. And all of a sudden I say box, and these guys start coming together and my bell doesn't sound. Now I've got a big problem because I know the bell should sound, but my timekeeper is not doing their job the right way, and they're allowing this fight to come, and this other guy's coming over to just land a big bomb, and we can have a problem when the timekeeper does not do their job the right way. It's a job that has a lot of specifics that need to be covered for someone to be effective at it, but the good ones do it all the time, and they make the life of the referee much easier because we can rely on them doing the right thing.
And the reason I use the word critical is because I've had some good experiences and some bad experiences. In terms of good experiences, I'll move it to great experiences. So our main timekeeper in Kansas, and she's also the main timekeeper in Missouri, is a woman named Marcia Champion. She is phenomenal.
Know her well.
Marcia's wonderful, and her husband Kevin is a great boxing referee and a great MMA judge. Marcia comes, she has the clapper, and I don't know if she bought it. I need to ask her. I'm going to see her, I think, this weekend at an MMA show in Kansas, actually. But it's two pieces of wood, and there's a hinge, and she comes with that. Yep. And it's a distinctive clap, clap, clap.
And she has nice handles on each side of it.
Absolutely. And she brings two stopwatches. She always brings a bag of candy for my 10-year-old Ellie, which is very sweet, and usually the judges and the referees get in on that, but she is so prepared, and you see how seriously she takes it. She's taking this position as seriously as anybody else. I mean, some of my stories on the flip side, I'll tell you too quickly. This is in the 90s, and this is really before commissions. It was a Midwest state. I don't want to say which one, but you can probably figure it out. The guy was hammered. I mean, he was hammered. He was so drunk. He wasn't buzzed. He was hammered. You know, that's a tough situation. This was a small show, but this was still professional boxing. I'm the only referee on the card. And this is before commission, so you don't really have anyone to bail you out but the promoter. And this guy is just tanked. It was a really difficult situation, you know, because I'm trying to keep a running clock in my head. We had an experience when I was the commentator for M1, and we're in the Netherlands, and the timekeeper is hitting the bell like it is a 2,000-year-old antique. I mean, he is just touching it. And finally, I got it between fights, and I said, sir, I don't mean to be rude, but you really got to hit that bell. No one can hear it. He said, I'm sorry, I'm very nervous. I don't know what there is to be nervous. Just hit the bell.
Hit the goddamn bell, man.
Touching it, and nobody could hear. And it was a very difficult and awkward situation.
You know, it's the good ones, you know, no one knows who they are. But, you know, I could sit here and name off people, you know, and, you know, Mike North and Mike Millsap, Willie Areola. Those are all guys in California. Man, you know, they're great. Tiffany is the new one out here. She's fantastic. She's learned from the old time guys, and you know, she's doing a great job. You go to, you know, Nevada, and you're always going to get Steve and Ernie, and you know, Steve Esposito is, he's a, you know, just a great guy. Ernie's a longtime principal in you know, from you know, in Nevada there. He was, he's actually from basically the same area that my dad grew up, you know, Winslow, Arizona area and stuff, and just a great person. But, you know, those guys you can rely on. So when Kenny Bayless is, you know, doing a world championship fight, he knows that Steve and Ernie are going to be right in line with what he needs to have done. They're going to be accurate. And all of that takes pressure off of the referee. And, you know, the refereeing is a pressure-packed job, especially when it's, you know, a more prominent fight. But when you know you can rely on the people that you're working with to do the right thing, it helps you, because all the people that we work with are part of our team. And there's things that occur all the time. You know, the inspectors need to do their job. And when an inspector doesn't do his job, you know, the referee is going to get the blame, even though it's not his job. But the inspector can make the referee's job easy, or he can make it hard. You know, the timekeeper, same thing. The doctors, same thing. So everybody that you're working with, you want them to be on top of their game and doing things the right way, because that makes the entire team function. It's no different than football with, you know, Tom Brady is the absolute best right now as a quarterback, but he needs those linemen to do the right thing. He needs his backs to fill the holes. He needs his receivers to run the right routes. When they're all in line doing the right things, they're a well-oiled machine, and everything comes out good.
And, John, you nailed it. It's all of those jobs that nobody really pays attention to, including the fighters, until something goes wrong. And then suddenly, wow, what is this person doing? But there's an expectation of perfection, and when you don't get it, it's really glaring.
Absolutely. You know, and there's things that happen all the time, and it's, you look and you know, this situation – I've seen it to where, you know, I've seen fights go long where the timekeeper doesn't ring the bell when they're supposed to. I've seen it where the timekeeper rings the bell short. Absolutely. I've seen it where the referee, the timekeeper does everything right, and the referee misreads the sound and thinks it was the end of the round instead of the 10 seconds and stops it when the you know, timekeeper did the right thing and clapped the boards. So, you know, anything can happen. We're all human, and humans make mistakes. And so we try to, you know, relegate things to the point where we try to cut down the ability for those mistakes to happen as much as we can.
Well, this past Saturday at New York's Madison Square Garden, Gennady Golovkin recorded an 8th-round TKO win over David Lemieux to claim the IBF middleweight world title. So Golovkin's record now stands at 34-0 with 31 knockouts. John, to me, Golovkin is clearly the new big star in boxing, but what I want to get into is, is boxing in a position where Golovkin can be a general sports star? Can he achieve the fame of just the last generation of fighters, Oscar De La Hoya had, or what Floyd Mayweather Jr. has now, or Manny Pacquiao? Or has boxing, at least in the U.S. and Canada, been relegated to such a niche sport that Golovkin can be the biggest name in his sport, but he doesn't really break out of that sport?
You know what? I'll tell you what. It's Gennady Golovkin is so good. He's going to be the star. And the other thing that about him, and this is where it's hard to be, you know, a star. When you're looking at North America, you know, obviously we speak English. Well, Gennady, you know, he came from a, you know, a different country.
He's from Kazakhstan.
He's from Kazakhstan, and he's been learning English, and he speaks it really well. And the first time I met him, he came up to me and he says, "Hello, my name is Gennady Golovkin. I love what you do." And he's talking to me. I'm like, "Well, I love what you do, right?" And we started talking, and he's just a super personable guy, and he's very friendly, and he just loves what he does, and he's infectious. The excitement and the joy that he has about what he does in boxing, it's infectious, and it's just going to take that point where he gets the fight that he needs. This is the problem. He has not gotten the fight that he needs, and that's because he's so goddamn good. No one wants to fight him. You know, you can sit there and say whatever you want. There's very few guys out there that want to actually sign the contract to fight Gennady Golovkin because he is that good. He's tough. He is technically sound. He does everything well. He goes to the body incredibly well. He goes to the body as well as anybody we've had in boxing since Julio Cesar Chavez. And, man, I'll tell you what, you know, everyone knows. You know, if you've ever been in a, you know, combat sports and you've been hit to the body a lot and you get a guy that keeps attacking your body and you can't stop it, it's miserable. So you know when you're going to fight Gennady Golovkin, I'm going to be put in misery here for a while. Okay, even if you end up winning, which no one has done so far, man, he is a special fighter and, you know, he's just, he ain't going anywhere. He is that good.
Golovkin, his last 21 fights have ended with a win by knockout or TKO. Now, let's contrast that. Floyd Mayweather Jr., who retired or not retired, he's kind of in that limbo state. I think he's coming back for sure. But to me, he is the biggest star, at least from a North American perspective, in boxing. Would you agree on that, John, of active guys?
Yeah.
His last 10 fights have gone the distance. Manny Pacquiao, huge star. His last non-decision victory came 2009 versus Miguel Cotto. Mayweather, and we've talked about it a lot on this program, the tag is he's a defensive fighter. He's genius, but he's a boring genius. Golovkin, just the opposite. He's a genius, but he's an attacking, offensive, knockout machine type of genius. I just don't know if boxing in the year 2015 can produce a star that matches De La Hoya or Tyson or Ray Leonard or Tommy Hearns, Hagler, or then going back, Ali, Foreman, Frazier. I don't know. I'm not saying boxing's dying, and I'm not an alarmist. I think boxing has moved into a very niche category where it's tough to be a breakout star.
Well, I could be wrong, but I think Gennady's last decision victory was somewhere around 2008. So we're looking at least 7 years of fights where he has, you know, KO, TKO, everything is, you know, him stopping everybody that he's fighting. Now the real, you know, the real question and everyone's whole thing about Gennady is who has he fought? Well, he's fought everybody that will sign on the dotted line to fight him. He can't get the fights that he wants. He wants the Cotto. He wants the, you know, Canelo fight. He wants these guys, but none of them want him. And I don't blame him. You know, you don't want to go in and put yourself in a position where, goddamn, you know, there's a really good chance this guy can beat me. You know, and so you look at, you know, he, god dang it. You know, he's been doing fights here in the U.S. now for about the last 2 years, really, is really all it's been. And, you know, he probably has somewhere in the area of about 10 fights in the last 2 years, you know, and he's just destroyed everyone. You know, Martin Murray, he fought in Monaco. That was, you know, a couple of fights ago. And that fight, you know, Martin Murray is a tough son of a bitch. This is an Englishman that went out and he went to Argentina and fought when oh my God, I'm going brain dead. Who was the freaking middleweight champion?
Yeah, and I can't think of it either.
he trains right out here, right by me. and I'm all Sergio Martinez. My God, I'm an idiot. But, you know,
sorry, I couldn't help you on that.
He put on a great performance against Sergio Martinez, and many people thought, you know what? He won that fight. Now, he didn't win it on the scorecards in Argentina, but when Golovkin fought Martin Murray, Martin Murray was in incredible shape. He fought a hard fight. He went after him. He just got broken. He got beat down. Oh, I mean, and just destroyed round after round to the point where, you know, he couldn't take it anymore. And you look at, you know, he fought Willie Monroe here in Los Angeles, and, you know, my friend Jack Reese was the referee of that one. And going in, you know, I was in the locker room with Willie Monroe, you know, before, you know, as Jack did his instructions, and I went into Gennady's, and just the difference of the locker rooms, you could see, oh my God, I got one guy he's happy to be here, and one guy he's a little bit concerned about being here. And, you know, Willie fought hard. He went after him, but he just got played with. I honestly believe in that fight, Gennady ended up carrying Willie. He was trying to get more rounds in there. He took rounds off where he was just going. He would bring himself deep inside, and he had openings, and he wouldn't throw. And I'm like, he's just toying with him. You know, he's just carrying him until he decides, okay, I'm going to get out of here. And when he fought, you know, when he's going to fight Lemieux, I had a lot of people asking me, hey, you know, what do you think is going to happen? I said, dude, let me tell you something. I think David Lemieux is a really tough guy, man. He's, you know, he's got 34 wins himself, I believe, but hits like a truck. The guy, you know, he throws everything into the punches that he throws. But I'd watched him and I go, man, he's a good fighter. He's a tough fighter. He just is not on the same level as Triple G, and there's very few guys that I think are. The one guy that I can sit there and say he's at the same level as Triple G is Andre Ward. Andre Ward is from here in California. He's been undefeated since he was 12 years old. Won the Olympic gold, became, you know, boxing, went through the Super Six that, you know, Showtime put on. Everyone was sitting there saying, oh no, you know, Carl Froch is going to win it. This one, I said, you know what? Wait until they fight Andre Ward. And Andre Ward went out and proved exactly why, pound for pound, he is the best fighter right now there is. The other guy that I'll put with him is Gennady. And so they're only 8 pounds apart. That's the fight that should happen somewhere along the way. But, you know, that depends on both guys signing on a dotted line. And, you know, I honestly don't see Andre, you know, turning away from that fight. I definitely don't see Triple G turning away from that fight. That's the super fight. If you want the best in boxing and two guys that'll go after it, that's the fight to watch.
Well, in working against Gennady Golovkin too, in terms of being a breakout star to where the general sports fan knows who you are or seeps into pop culture like Mike Tyson or Roy Jones Jr. did in the 1990s, is the fact that it's not a golden age for middleweight. So we're talking about Andre Ward. He's a super middle, 168. Golovkin, his sweet spot is 160. We talked about Saul Canelo Alvarez. You know, his sweet spot is at 154. Miguel Cotto is probably the big fight at 160, but Cotto's a great fighter. But yep. I think that his best days are probably behind him right now.
He does not want to fight Triple G.
No, I don't think he does. You know, I've even heard talk of, Bernard Hopkins. Well, Hopkins would either have to come way down or Golovkin would have to go way up in weight. But does Bernard Hopkins at this stage of his career want that fight?
No, probably not. You know, take a look at Bernard. Bernard has been incredible. Here's a guy that fought as, you know, a champion up to the age of 50. He's incredible, but he's 50 years old, and the things that Bernard has done to keep himself competitive has been amazing. But father time has slowed Bernard down. And when you look at when he had his fight against Kovalev, he fought Sergey Kovalev, and the crusher just got to him. You could see that he couldn't land the shots that before he could land to keep someone off of him. He just couldn't do the same things, and that's just age. It just happens. Speed kills. And when you are the slower guy in there, it's tough. And, you know, Bernard Hopkins, I have nothing but absolute respect for everything that he's ever done. He is not the guy that needs to fight Gennady Golovkin.
Every week here on Let's Get It On, we bring you our poll question. You can cast your vote on our website, letsgetitonpodcast.com. Last week we asked, do you feel that Athletic Commission should test combat sports athletes for marijuana use? 89% of you voted no. This week's poll question, do you feel that Gennady Golovkin will become the biggest worldwide star in professional boxing? Let your voice be heard. Vote yes or no on our website, letsgetitonpodcast.com. John, I would vote yes, but I just simply think that the way boxing is right now, the era of boxing, and I'm not saying it couldn't change in 5 years or 2 years or 20 years, I think that it's going to be virtually impossible unless you're an American heavyweight who's knocking people out at the rate of Golovkin to break through. The way, for instance, Ronda Rousey has broken through in MMA, to where people who don't even follow your sport know who you are. The way that Tom Brady has broken through in the NFL, the way Serena Williams has broken through in women's tennis.
Yeah, it's going to be, you know, but it comes down to the competition level. Because if you're looking at, you know, Gennady as a middleweight, he's got Miguel Cotto, who absolutely has resurrected his career, has done phenomenal things. I love Miguel Cotto as a fighter. I think the fight that he has against Canelo, that's a great fight. I'm looking forward to seeing it. But that's the guy, the only guy in the middleweight division that Golovkin can fight, where Gennady can say, look it, I fought this top-level guy. Because everybody else that's in there, you can look at Peter Quinlan, you know, he's a good fighter, but he just is not, you know, he's got a really good record, but no one wants to see him against Gennady because they know it's just not going to be that good of a fight. You got Andy Lee, who is another guy, you know, good record for, you know, Irish Andy Lee, but no one knows him. Daniel Jacobs is in there. No one knows him. And this is the problem when you are looking at all of this. There's nobody there for Gennady to get that legend status where he takes on that legend that is viable, except for Cotto, until he, you know, unless he wants to go up, you know, like I said, and if he goes up into, you know, the super, you know, super middleweights, Andre Ward is sitting there. You still got Arthur Abraham, who is, you know, and he's tougher than hell, come straight ahead guy. You know, even Anthony Durrell is there. There's guys that he could fight that, you know, but again, Andre Ward being the top guy, that's the only one. There's just not that somehow in the welterweight level of boxing, we had this glutton of really top talent. And, you know, Pacquiao came up to it and Mayweather came up to it. And you had, you know, Oscar De La Hoya, and you had all these guys at that welterweight where that was the one where a lot of really great fighters could match up. Well, you know, in the middleweight and super middleweight, we just don't have that many guys that someone like Triple G can make that fight and show everybody just how good he is against that person that's going to set him on that blast up into the stratosphere as a star.
Because we're primarily an MMA podcast, but we are also a combat sports podcast. I realize that there are a number of you listening to this program worldwide who don't follow boxing that closely. Maybe you've heard the name Gennady Golovkin, but you don't really know a lot about him. I encourage you. You're obviously a fan of combat sports in one regard or another. If you're listening to our show,
you got
to
watch
Gennady Golovkin. It's something truly special.
Yeah, I mean, he is so good. He is just technically the way his footwork and how he cuts guys off and how he sets them up. He comes inside, outside. He does everything so technically well. It's a privilege to watch him. You know, it's just incredible what he's become.
Big John and I are back with you next week for an all-new episode of Let's Get It On, first available on Friday. Download and subscribe to our podcast on the iTunes Store. For Android, download the Stitcher app and subscribe. And you can go straight to our website, letsgetitonpodcast.com. You can also find us on social media, facebook.com/letsgetitonpodcast, and on Twitter, @PodcastMMA for this show, and for us personally, @JohnMcCarthyMMA and @SeanWheelock. To ask us a question, make a comment, or inquire about becoming a sponsor of Let's Get It On, email us at info@letsgetitonpodcast.com. Again, that's info@letsgetitonpodcast.com. For John McCarthy, producer Chris Lakin, and our entire crew, I'm Sean Wheelock. Thanks for listening, everyone. This has been a presentation of Ignotainment Media Network, online at ignotainment.com.
Let's Get It On with Big John McCarthy and Sean Wheelock, only on the Ignotainment Media Network. Don't forget to leave a rating and review in the comments section of the iTunes podcast store. If you have questions, comments, or are interested in sponsoring the show, contact us at info@letsgetitonpodcast.com or check out our additional lineup of podcasts, including Ocho Man, Behind the 8-Ball, The Whiskey Philosopher, and Youth Baseball Talk at ignotainment.com.